Chapter 14. The British Museum, Bloomsbury, London, England. July 5th, 2017. 3:58 a.m. They hit the roof of the building, a pulsing shimmer of yellow spirit particles padding their landing. Shigiri released Noma and shuffled forward on the sloping roof until he was at the edge. Reaching down, his fingers found the triangular peak of the tympanum, which held an array of sculpted images in a pediment above the museum's main entrance. He held onto the edge of its recessed stone center with his left hand and slid off the roof, letting himself dangle precariously in front of the graven image of a crowned woman in long drapes, holding a globe and a spear. She stared back at him with empty stone eyes. "The images here are so lifeless and colorless." He reached up with his right hand. Noma was waiting for him, a halo of moonlight behind her, highlighting the edges of her hair with ghostly flare. She took his hand and hopped off the roof in one fluid movement, dangling beneath him and checking quickly to ensure they still hadn't been seen. When she was sure they were clear, one finger tapped his forearm and he let go. They dropped down to the ground between two pillars in front of the main door, landing on the solid stone, still silent and upright, without needing to bend their knees. Noma's skin-tight dress didn't even ride up. They stepped, with one coordinated movement, like a dance, behind the columns for cover. Noma held her left hand up to her lips and kissed her palm, producing a cluster of yellow sparks. She blew the fiery kiss into the air. The particles floated, wispy like living embers, into the museum, seeping through spaces between the hinges of the doors and the windows to all the cameras and lock system locations she'd memorized that afternoon in their hotel room while Shigiri had tracked down Alistair. They waited for almost a minute, and then she smiled. Shigiri allowed himself to relax a little, unable to completely suppress his feelings of admiration, of fascination even. He adjusted his rolled-up sleeves, pushing them up above his elbows. Then, together, they slid out from behind the columns and walked into the museum like it belonged to them, the twin wood and glass doors opening smoothly like the welcoming wings of a hulking butterfly. They walked briskly through the narrow foyer and into a quadrangular room with a high tessellated blue glass roof and a circular central column large enough to be a room of its own, flanked by two staircases that ringed it like romantic suitors. There, in the expansive great court, they saw a thickly bearded security guard with a pot belly and sunken sleepy eyes, wearing a navy blue uniform two sizes too tight for him. He was pacing in front of the stairs. The sight of the two of them approaching at such a late hour must have confused him so much that he didn't know how to react at first, because he completely froze, as if every nerve in his body had been overloaded. Then he muttered the bewildered, "What in the..." He trailed off like his own words had jarred his thoughts, throwing his eyes wide open in a spike of panic. Before he could reach for his radio, Noma fixed him with a look. Her eyes flared yellow and then narrowed. The security guard's eyes glazed over. Shigiri watched Noma as she focused her aura at him. He'd seen her do it once in Hanoi, fill a man's mind with desire like newfound madness until he was utterly pliable. He would do anything she commanded him to do, like stay in place. Shigiri knew that the guard was not unable to move, he was just unwilling to. His mind would be completely suffused with a desire to please her, able to think of nothing else but staying exactly where he was until she told him to move again. It was one of her more impressive tricks, though it only worked on impressionable people like this guard. He was as still as one of the statues he was meant to watch over. They didn't even miss a step, their shoes still silent against the polished marble floor. They turned right and cleared some distance before descending the stairs to the lower floor. Winding along the stone and marble passageways, they ignored the splendid displays all around them. They were not exactly in a rush, but were conscious of the time. It was not long till sunrise. When they arrived in front of a large, plain, white composite door beside a wide-framed display of Nsibidi symbols in black and white, Noma whispered, "We're here." Shigiri first pulled the door open and then pushed on the secondary glass doors to gain access. They both yielded without resistance. A smell like vaporized bleach scraped at his nose, and there was a faint humming sound that made his spirit particles vibrate like an itch. The gallery walls were painfully white and sterile, arrayed with an assortment of colorful masks, cloths, pottery, weapons, and all manner of items displayed atop plinths in transparent cases. Some of the items were works of art. Others he recognized as totems of gods, deities, and spirit entities from his and other spirit companies he had worked with in the past. Now all displayed, hung, bound, or in locked glass boxes like prisoners. He stared, shocked. "Are you okay?" Nama asked when she noticed that he had stopped moving. "Yes," he replied quickly, remembering where he was. But he stayed still. "Shigiri?" He only started moving again when he realized he could hear his teeth grinding against each other. "Yes, I'm fine. Let's just get what we came for." Despite his words, something had started to bubble beneath his skin, carrying a feeling like fire through his blood and filling him with heat at what the sight before him represented. He'd never cared much about these kinds of things when he'd been in the spirit company. He'd been far too concerned with his own happiness and survival then. Besides, things like totems and relics and idols and masks and shrines were commonplace. Just the background elements of existence, the rigorously religious tools of worship in the lives of men. They may have been made, charmed, used, broken, reclaimed, or forgotten, but they always mattered to someone. It was a certain kind of savagery to keep these once purposeful items for no other purpose than display, as trophies in memoriam of a colonizer's self-given right to take. To Shigiri, it felt wrong, and that wrongness ran bone deep. They proceeded deeper into the gallery, past an elaborate case that caught his eye because it displayed a trio of masquerades from a mass hysteria project that he'd coordinated more than 300 years ago with Okpolodo, the fearful Kalabari god of war and headhunting. Past a long wooden Apambata spear that Shigiri remembered from his time constructing the nightmares of a young boy who had seen his father killed with it at the hands of a cruel king. Past a rack of swords that included the ceremonial alligator sword wielded by Oba Oronpoto herself, the first female Alafin of the Oyo Empire in her conquest of Nupe. It was a sword that had once inspired so much fear in the hearts of so many men. The rush of memories reminded Shigiri of the early times when the Orisha Spirit Company had been an exciting place to work, before everything changed. It was all conflated to stoke the fire in him and set his bones ablaze with anger. He wanted to break all the glass cages and liberate everything, all these relics from his past life and from the lives of so many other gods he'd known, some of whom were now dead, starved of worship. He wanted to bring it all down, but he restrained himself. They had a job to do. Finally, they came to it, the brass head of Obalufon, in a raised glass cage of its own, atop a marble plinth and set against a wall, with a dim light over it, giving its bold and lined features a sinister slant. They could see the discolored headdress and a spot where someone had tried to smooth a crack in the base, but had not quite achieved the same level of craftsmanship as the rest of it. "It's not as impressive up close," Noma said, staring, "compared to the images Olorun showed us. It's not quite life-size, you know? It's just a little bit too small to be an average adult human head." Shigiri grunted. He thought it looked spectacular, but that's because he was used to the disproportionate. He used to be disproportionate. And just like him, it was a vessel. A vessel crafted by a knowing, skilled hand. A vessel far away from the place where it had been first crafted and given purpose. A vessel that now contained a piece of someone more powerful. "We have it. Now we need to get out of here." Noma placed a long, svelte finger on the glass in front of them, the tip of her sharpened red nail making a delicate yet insistent contact. She began to trace a circle with her finger. The precision of the motion was uncanny as she cut into the glass smoothly and silently, like she was made of pure diamond, leaving only a trail of faint yellow light and ash residue. "The substructure," she said by way of reminder, never looking away from her work. He nodded, leaving her to finish her task. A choking sensation seized his throat, and his skin tingled as though his spirit particles were vibrating their way out of him as he stepped between a row of three tall glass displays of iron, ivory, and bronze busts. They had been violently looted during the sacking of Benin City in 1897 as punishment for successfully repelling a previous British attack. He closed his eyes and took a series of short, sharp breaths. Focus. It occurred to him that the angry fire that threatened to consume him from within was not just a matter of memory and regret for things lost. It concerned the present as well. Perhaps the brass head was not the only artifact in the building that still contained essences of its former creators, owners, and patrons. He was overcome with temptation to take more of them with him, to rescue them. Perhaps the mask of Queen Idia, the sight of which called to him like a siren song, reminding him of the long history between the Yoruba and Edo people written in their shared blood. He exhaled a long breath and shook his head to dispel his thoughts and refocus. Refocus on the task at hand. He was no longer a god in the spirit company. He was just an independent contractor doing a job. The past was the past, and he was standing in a monument to that fact, no matter how much he disliked it. He resumed his short trek to the center of the gallery and knelt on the cold hardwood floor in the clear space, placing his right palm on it. A chill ran through him, not unlike the one he had felt when he'd first touched the Weirlandrillic, but much less potent. Sealing magic. He braced himself, took in a deep breath, and without moving the rest of his body, pressed against the floor. Hard. A streak of quiet lightning shot out of his hand with such force that the wood and underlayment exploded out, leaving only cracked and blackened concrete and a small haze of white smoke. When it cleared, he lifted his hand up only a little way off the ground to keep the incoming impact limited, balled it into a fist, and drove it down into the exposed concrete with one smooth movement. The impact instantly sent a tight, circular, concave spider's web of cracks spilling across the concrete. The bonds that held the composite material together at the impact site yielded and deformed before giving and falling apart in large solid slabs that dropped down into the empty space of the substructure below. The glass displays all around him had barely been disturbed. Shigidi rose and took a quick step back to avoid falling as a chunk of concrete at the edge of the break fell, completing the hole that was big enough for three people to fall through. A damp, wet smell wafted up through it, and the dust tickled his nose. He smiled as he admired the precision of his handiwork. Contained chaos. He had learned to control the power he'd absorbed from Shongo. That was another gift he was eternally grateful to Noma for. She taught him so much about taking advantage of his form, using his own pliable nature to manipulate spirit particles, controlling his own fear, absorbing other energies. Skills that all proved extremely useful. He turned to see her smiling and cradling the head of Obalufo in her arms, like it was a breastfeeding child. He was about to say, "Let's go," when he saw her face contort into the shape of an incoming scream. Before the sound of it could hit him, his entire body was seized by what seemed like a vice made of rough skin, and he was jerked backwards violently. The world accelerated, his breath snagged, and his neck bent in an unnatural angle. There was a flash of pain when his head and right shoulder hit the angry edges of the hole he had just created, and he fell into its darkness, arms and legs flailing up at its receding maw. His blurred vision focused on the hole as it narrowed to a point in the abyss. he fell for what seemed like eternity before he finally slammed into hard, unforgiving floor, peppered with concrete debris, knocking the wind out of him. He almost blacked out on impact, but the sounds of something like sinister laughter and loud, explosive footsteps inspired him to hold on to his consciousness aggressively. There is something dangerous here. Ignoring the pain shooting from his back, he rolled onto his belly and blinked rapidly until he could see again. There was some light, but it was faint and unevenly distributed. He assessed his surroundings. High stone walls up to at least 50 feet above, maybe more. They were strangely muraled and leaning at angles to the floor, as though the room had funneled down. The wall right behind him offered no space to retreat. Shadows everywhere. A blood-stained elevated stone slab ahead of him, in what appeared to be the center. A small heap of bones, cloth, and yellowed papers right next to it. Dust, debris, dried blood, all over the upward-sloping floor. Rows of black kerosene lamps that couldn't possibly have been burning actual kerosene, hanging high upon the walls, except at the farthest corner, where there was a curtain of darkness, where he was sure whoever or whatever had attacked him had retreated. He could still hear their heavy breathing and trailing snickers echoing around. He scrambled up onto one knee just as Noma dropped down onto the floor beside him, her heels a spark with yellow and the brass head in her hand. She'd sprouted her wings, the back of her dress was torn, and her hair was wild with the rush of air. "Are you okay?" she asked with wide eyes. "I'm fine, I think," he said, even though his entire body ached. "I saw a hand grab you and pull you down here. What was it?" "Section 6. She asked, referring to the secretive branch of the Royal British Spirit Bureau that protected the museum. "Maybe, but Olonu didn't say there would be anything or anyone here," Shigidi replied, before calling out into the darkness, "Show yourself, coward!" No response, just constant heavy breathing, and the laughter, the constant, infuriating laughter. "Show yourself!" he shouted into the looming void. The darkness gained an unusual border as two shapes appeared at the edge of the lamp-lit shadows on the ground. Mustiness pervaded the air. "I don't know what that is, but I'm not sure we want to wait to find out," Noma said. "Yes, let's get out of here now," he agreed. His body didn't like the memory of being gripped by whatever was out there, and his mind didn't like the games it was playing now. The shadows continued to lengthen. "Should we go back up? We can make the jump, or I can carry you if you don't feel up to it," Noma suggested. "And then what? We've already moved the brass head more than 5 meters out of place. That means the museum is sealed off now. There's no exit that way. We can't go back. But we do need to get away from whatever this is. We're already in the chamber, so we just have to stick to the plan and get Spirit Side." "The phone," Noma said, nodding. Shigidi reached into his pocket, and when his fingers touched it, he felt the rough tickle of shattered glass, and he could immediately tell that the screen was cracked. "Shit," he muttered under his breath, feeling the ground start to vibrate beneath him. "Wahala no de finish." The shapes finally stepped out of the shadows and into the light, resolving themselves into two hulking figures, at least 3 times Shigidi's own already impressive size. They were both thickly bearded and sported matching outfits, old and stained black shirts, brown trousers, and brown wingtip shoes. One of them was a bit stockier, wore plain black suspenders and a frayed black pork pie hat that almost scraped the bottom of the hanging lamps. The other was wiry, long-limbed, and wore a grey ascot cap and a bow tie. "Who the hell are you two?" Shigidi asked. There was no response for a few seconds, and then the two giants looked at each other. "We've got intruders, Gog," the stocky one said, pounding his right fist into his left palm. "Intruders indeed, Magog. We don't like intruders, do we?" Their voices were mirrored, both deep and harsh and guttural, like the sound of rocks being ground against each other. Shigidi instinctively took a step back. "What are those things?" he asked, holding out the phone they needed to get Spirit Sight to Noma. They just told us, Gog and Magog, she said, taking it before adding, the twin guardians of Albion. You know them? Shigiri asked, eyes still trained ahead. I think so, she replied, retreating in step with him to assess the damage to the phone. But I'm not sure. The twin guardians of Albion are supposed to be dead, killed in a wrestling match near Plymouth hundreds of years ago. At least, that's what an English spirit agent I met in Constantinople told me. But they don't look very dead to me, Shigiri grunted. The two giants advanced slowly, like predators, grinning at them with large brown teeth like boulders. Noma was furiously pressing the passcode into the crazed surface of the phone screen. All the while, the two giants continued to come closer, mouths and eyes wide and full of malicious intent. Shigiri kept his hand on the ground and his eyes on the twin giants. It's working, Noma cried out when the screen finally unlocked. And then the stocky giant to Shigiri's left took a leaping stride forward, coming at him fist first. But Shigiri had already felt the ground shift and knew what was coming. He was ready. He rolled out of the way, feeling a rush of displaced air against his ribs as the fist went by and the giant lurched forward, head too far tilted over his center of gravity. Using the negative momentum of his roll to change direction, Shigiri sprang to his feet and threw himself into the giant's bulk at a sideways angle, hitting him square in the chest and sending him crashing into a wall. Magog! His brother cried out, kicking Shigiri mid-air just before he could regain a solid footing. Shigiri held onto the tree trunk leg as all the air was forced out of him. His grip was tenuous, but it held, and it prevented him from being launched across the room into the back wall. It also gave him time to think. The moment Gog's foot yielded to gravity and was back down on the ground, Shigiri scrambled behind it and threw a vicious punch into the back of the knee, forcing the giant to crouch and bring his massive head down to Shigiri's level. Shigiri gave Gog no time to react. He leaped up and wrapped his arms around the giant's thick neck in a choke that was more like an aggressive embrace, because the neck was the size of a large man's torso, and he could only manage to secure the choke by interlocking his fingers. He squeezed with everything he had, but it felt like hugging a steel mountain. There was barely any give. Out of the corner of his vision, he saw Noma preparing to join the fight. Her wings were flared out to their full span, and her skin was taking on its hard, scaly form, morphing quickly like it was being folded from the inside out. She kicked off her high heels and pushed her hair back. Her eyes burned bright yellow, and long claws extruded from her fingers, which were still wrapped around the brass head they'd come for. Shigiri hardened his clay flesh, imagined himself as an unyielding statue, and anchored his feet on two large ribs, pushing his hips into the giant shoulder blades to torque the choke. Immovable object meet impossible force. He grinned when he heard the gurgling sound of air and saliva being restricted by the pressure. He squeezed tighter, but could only hold on for a few seconds before Magog seized his left leg and yanked him off. Shigiri slid down and his face smashed into the ground before he could manipulate his form and loosen his body. The iron and ash taste of his own blood and spirit particles filled his mouth. Shigiri rolled to a crouch behind the stone slab at the center of the chamber and looked up just in time to see Noma fly at the attacking Magog like a crazed arrow. Just as he was about to hit Shigiri, she rotated her body on its axis like a gymnast so that her feet made contact with Magog's face. She followed through, slashing at his face and forearms with her feet and wings in wild arcs of bright yellow, still cradling the precious brass head of a Balufon in her arms. She's beautiful, even in the middle of battle. She's beautiful. Shigiri took the opening she gave him to tackle the still coughing and retching Gog before he could fully rise to his feet, and they fell together. Shigiri mounted atop Gog, his knees digging into the giant's belly. On the ground, so close together and with gravity now on Shigidi's side, some of the giant's advantage was neutralized. Punch for punch and dodge for dodge, they matched each other. The hand of Shongo around Shigiri's heart drove him like an engine as he squeezed out bursts of lightning with each strike, enhancing the damage. The giant was strong, and each wild windmill blow that landed in retaliation threatened to send Shigiri flying. But he had hardened his clay body, and he held onto the giant's suspenders. He couldn't match the giant's raw strength, and so he returned each punch with precision and calibrated power, sending out flashes of white light through the room as if it were full of eager photographers. It was like riding a bull made of perpetual assault, but Shigiri took to it quickly. He targeted the weakest areas, the neck, the eye socket, the bridge of the nose, with downward pounding strikes and hammer fists that could have fractured mountains, but there seemed to be little impact, little damage. Always still, there was that grin, that horrible grin. Shigiri glanced up as he twisted his torso to avoid a hook punch and saw that, despite using her spirit particles to edge her wings, Noma hadn't so much as cut the skin of the other giant. "We can't make a dent. They're strong and resilient. Too resilient." The realization hit him fully that even assuming they could beat these monsters guarding the Pendragon Room, they might not do it in time. They needed to get to the spirit side of London before it was too late. As his core musculature recoiled, he rotated back into a blow to his exposed chest, and he found himself airborne. Shit! He was still spinning mid-air, trying to stabilize himself by spreading his arms and lifting his chest, when a second blow caught him. Everything churned as if he'd been seized by a tornado. He tried to loosen his body, but the centrifugal force was too great, made him feel like he was spinning out, scattering away from his center, and so he stopped trying and just held his form. When he hit the ground, he landed on his back, and pain lanced through his spine. A constellation of stars and sparks danced across his vision when he tried to open his eyes, so he shut them again, rolling away from the vibration of the ground just before a foot crashed down where he had been. His blood quickened, and he opened his eyes, willing the invading pain and darkness back with clenched fists. He called out to Numa, "Let's go! Make the call!" She nodded and flew backward at a hard angle, retreating from Magog as she pressed her fingers to the screen, searching for the number that Alistair had keyed in. The distraction cost her. Magog's large hand shot forward faster than she could fly, wrapped itself around her like a hostile blanket, and slammed her into the wall. The back of her head bounced against unforgiving stone. "Noma!" When he saw her pinned against the wall, Magog's bone-sickle grin next to her head, and the ugly giant fist raised in the air to strike her, Shigiri's heart froze. A memory as sharp and quick as a blade cut through his mind of the night they'd met, when she'd pinned him to the wall of the hotel room and he'd had to attempt something he'd never done before. "If we can't beat them physically, there may be another way." He stretched out his hand and closed his eyes, using one of his old nightmare god tricks to feel for the giant's thoughts, even though he was still awake. A mass of foreign memories and thoughts and feelings and sensations hit Shigiri all at once like a truck. Boulders, men with swords, rage, a kiss, a fish, lovemaking near a bonfire, gnawing on bone marrow, an embrace, men in blood-red robes, chains. It was too much, far too much. It was like being caught in a flood of feeling. And not every feeling was the giant's. He could see flashes of Noma in some of them, and even flashes of himself. He was no longer sure which thoughts were his and which were theirs. "I'm blurring the boundaries of nightmare and reality. No, focus." Shigiri stood firm against a subconscious tide, sifting rapidly through it all until he caught a memory of falling down the side of a cliff. Embedded in that memory, he felt a flash of fear, raw and primal. It had to be the giant's. Shigiri's eyes shot open, and he seized it. The giant's body froze, his fist mid-flight towards Noma's face, as he was caught in a waking nightmare of falling. A never-ending falling. "Got you." Noma pushed against the massive hand, using both her hands and a concentrated beam of spirit particles. It budged the giant's grasp just enough for her to wrench herself out and smile at him. He was about to smile back when the look on her face changed and she launched herself at him. "Noma, this is our chance to make the call. What are you doing? Gog!" He'd been so focused on stopping Magog that he'd almost forgotten the other giant. Shigiri spun around just in time to see the sole of a large shoe approaching his face. He threw up his arms to protect himself, but Noma got there first, a defensive arc of spirit particles assembled in front of her like a shield. When she intercepted Gog's kick, there was an explosion like a bomb, and the impact sent all of them flying. Shigiri couldn't tell if he hit a wall or the ground. All he knew was that it was stone and it hurt. Coughing, he stumbled to his feet and saw Noma lying at the feet of the frozen Magog, the cracked phone and the brass head still in her hands. She saved me. His eyes went wide when he saw it. Magog's fist was still moving, slowly, but it was moving. It wasn't working. His body was resisting the waking nightmare, and he was going right for Noma. No! Enough! Instinct took over. Shigiri's chest tightened, and he felt an intense pressure in his chest, like the hand of Shonga was squeezing his heart harder than it ever had. The sensation filled him up with so much raw power, his skin strained against the pressure like an inflating balloon. A gate had opened in his mind, and he couldn't consciously control it. His entire right hand ignited with electric fire, radiating harsh blue and white streaks of light and throwing strange new shadows along the walls. His arm felt like it was burning with a familiar fire, but beneath that he could feel a strange new sensation, like he was actually being consumed, like the very clay that bonded his spirit particles and delineated the boundaries of his body was being destroyed. He thought his body into rigidity, trying to mentally hold on to his form as lightning leaked from him in unexpected places. The magnitude of power he had summoned in that moment surprised him, and he could no longer keep it concentrated in his fist. It overflowed as he launched himself right past Gog and into the air like a missile, aimed straight for the monster that would do Noma harm. When he struck his target, he felt a mass of flesh and clay and spirit particles cleave to him as he stabbed his turbulent fist into the giant's exposed neck. It exploded. Blood and light bathed the chamber. An instant later, a shockwave flung them apart and sent Shigiri reeling in a direction he couldn't tell. Loose stone fell and dust rose. At first, there was silence. Then a hollow cry of pain, and then a scream. It was Noma. Noma was screaming. Shigiri forced himself to look up to make sure she was okay, but when he saw her, she was staring back at him, eyes full of terror and hands over her mouth, choking back the scream that had escaped her when she first saw him. He was kneeling in a pile of scattered chunks of brain matter, large skull fragments like ancient pottery, pools of thick blood that appeared black in the harsh light. He was covered in it all. It took him a moment to realize that his right arm was missing. Fuck! Sputtering wild streaks of muted lightning shot out of the stump at his shoulder. There was no pain initially, only surprise. Is this real? Am I still blurring nightmare and reality? He shook his head in disbelief. We have to get out. Make the call, he said to Noma, wiping the blood from his face. His voice was hoarse and barely audible, even to himself. He tried to move, to rise to his feet, and that was when the pain crashed into him like a wave. He let out a cry that threatened to rip out his throat. Noma reached for him, but he shook his head. He bit back another cry, pressing his teeth against each other like he was trying to weld them together. Noma was a brown and blue blur as she fumbled around on the floor around her, searching for the phone. The heaving body of Gog lay several feet away, a reminder of the still present danger. When she found the phone, she snapped up the brass head of a Banufor, using her wings to steady herself. She engulfed Shigiri in an embrace that felt like a blanket, her wings cocooning them as her spirit particles formed a bright yellow makeshift bandage around his stump, trying to stop both the bleeding and the as-yet uncaged lightning that was leaking from him. She tapped the fractured green call symbol on the cracked screen, and a white ellipse of light exploded into the space in front of them. At its center was a pinpoint of darkness, an absolute void staring at them like an eye. She stepped into it, bringing Shigiri with her. Then its borders fell behind them, and the world dissolved. When the world returned, it was changed. They were in what looked like the same space, but the giants and the gore and the lamps and the shadows were gone. The stone was preternaturally clean, free of dust, and there seemed to be a faint light everywhere, even though no source was immediately visible. It seemed like it was radiating from everywhere at once. Everything around them seemed to have lost some sense of rigidity and gained an aura. They were spirit-side. Stretching ahead of them, now visible beyond the elevated center slab, was a sloping walkway leading upward into a corridor. "It worked," Nama said, sounding surprised as she adjusted her grip on his torso to let him know that she was going to lift him. The brass edge of totem they had come for dug into his side, but he didn't even feel it. Not really. She gave a gentle flap of her wings and elevated them into the air, gliding forward and upwards, almost parallel to the slope as they drifted into the corridor toward the exit. Shigiri looked up at her, his vision blurry and unfocused. He thought for a moment he could propel himself forward on his own 2 feet, believe that he could make it out of London Spirit Side, weak as he was. But something about the way Nama looked at him let him know he should be carried. Besides, he wasn't sure how long they had till sunrise, before the Weyland-Drillic's connection to London Spirit Side would be severed. They needed to get to the rendezvous point quickly. He tried not to slump against Nama's body so completely, but he could barely feel anything, not even the air rushing past his bare scalp. He tried to will his body to reshape itself, to loosen and rearrange its form, to take what it needed from other parts of him and reconstitute a new arm, but he could not reform himself, no matter how clear the image was in his mind. It felt like he was trying to open a door without a key, like he had regressed to the time before he met Nama, impotently trapped in a form he desperately wanted to change, but couldn't. Some aspect of his new self had been lost completely, annihilated. So, is this what Shongo's final blow would have done to me if Olonru hadn't intervened? He surrendered his diminished body to her. He was not sure if she understood what it was costing him in pride, but she had already saved him once that night, just before he'd saved her. Partners. The word seemed to settle on a new meaning for him. Besides, it was his love for her that had made him put himself at risk again, to almost destroy himself from within, and so he thought he might as well let her return the favor. Nama's voice shook as she murmured, "Shigiri, I don't know what to..." A sound like the grinding of stone against stone erupted before she could complete her sentence. Still drifting backwards upslope, she spun them around midair to look in the direction the sound had come from. The elevated slab at the center of the chamber was shaking, throwing off fragments of loose stone. A faint circle of pale blue light had formed around it and was intensifying, pulsing in time with the vibrations. "No, not again." Shigiri recognized what was most likely coming after them. He barked out a sound that was meant to say, "Faster, we have to get out now," but came out as little more than a series of inaudible groans. Luckily, Nama didn't need words to understand his sentiment. She lifted a knee, flapped a wing, and pirouetted back around before shooting forward in a flash, flying as fast as she could for the exit that Olonwu schematics promised would be there. The grinding sound continued, getting fainter as they put distance between them and the spirit side version of the museum substructure's main chamber. The corridor narrowed as they ascended, until at last they could see the gate at its end. An imposing wrought iron and wood barrier that looked like it had been built hundreds of years ago and unopened since. Nama decelerated their flight and stopped just inches away from it, dropping to her feet and setting Shigiri down on the ground beside her. There was no visible handle or keyhole or lock or latch. Nothing except an uneven brown and black barrier. She hammered at it wildly with her fists and the tips of her wings.
"Alistair! Are you there? Alistair! Open the gate!"
In the distance, over the noise, they heard a soft, sharp snap, like the breaking of bone, and then the quaking of footsteps, the same footsteps that had stalked them from the darkness when they first fell into the substructure. Shigidi knew the giant had finally herniated into London Spiritside and was in pursuit. For a moment full of perfect physical and emotional exhaustion, with the stump throbbing where his arm used to be and his legs slowly turning into what felt like bags of cement beneath him, Shigidi allowed himself to wonder if Alistair had betrayed them, left them trapped in a secret section of the city spirit side where they could never escape. It was not inconceivable. Magicians were not the most trustworthy group, and one way to get rid of a debt is to make sure your creditor can never collect. He almost laughed at the thought, but the thing that came out of him was not really a laugh. It was only a muffled choke as his throat dredged up bubbles of blood, froth and saliva. Noma was shouting louder,
"Alistair, open the gate!"
The footsteps were getting louder, but they also seemed to be slowing down. The narrowing space. Still, it wouldn't be long. The walkway was tight, but if the giant could follow them through the spirit space barrier, he probably wouldn't be stopped by stone. Shigidi wondered if he could channel another killing blow through his other arm, regardless of the cost. The effort would probably kill him, but if that's what it took, then so be it. At least Noma would survive, maybe even escape. He kissed his teeth, sucked in a deep breath, and tried to gather enough concentration to loosen some of himself and use his own clay body to at least cover his stump to seal it. But he couldn't. There was just too much of him gone. Too little potency in his imagination, and too much pain to focus. More banging on the gate.
"Alistair Crowley, open this fucking—"
She stopped when the gate creaked. She took a step back. Shigiri's breath quickened as the gate creaked again, louder this time as the hinges flexed and then rotated. Air rushed in as a gap finally appeared, sundering the gate vertically along its middle. "Ah!" Noma cried as she pulled her wings in tightly behind her like theatre curtains. She bent over and hoisted Shigiri's arm over her shoulder. He groaned as she stepped through the gap, keeping him in a half-embrace while her other hand cradled the brass head of Obalufo. Standing there on the other side was Alistair, a look of mild amusement plastered on his face and what looked like a black cab parked across the street behind him. His cheer became a look of horror in one single brushstroke of realization.
"What the bloody hell happened to you two?" he exclaimed. "We have to get out of here, now!"
she commanded, almost screaming. He pointed over his shoulder at the cab. "Get in!" She made for the vehicle, holding Shigidi as she retracted her wings, pulling them effortlessly into the flesh of her back. The street looked normal. Rows of tightly packed houses, streetlights, cars. But there was the constant light, and around them a few ghosts of Londoners walked past, down in the middle of the roadway, conducting the business of their afterlife, apparently oblivious to the bloody and battered intruders. Above, the sky was a bright, cloudy orange. It looked like a strange storm was coming.
"Shut that gate!" Noma cried.
Alistair did as he was told, throwing his weight against the two halves of the gate and forcing them back together like once estranged lovers. The loud scrambling and scraping sounds coming from within were making him visibly uncomfortable as he tried to focus on getting the gate closed.
"Noma, I don't think I want to see whatever did that to Shigidi," he said. "Then shut up and shut that door. We need to go now to the Nigeria High Commission. That's where Olonru said we should meet him."
Alistair grunted and set to the task. But just before the two sides of the door could come together completely, a bloody finger the size of a man's forearm jammed itself into the space between them. A dirty claw-like fingernail dug into the wood, and Alistair screamed. The single finger became eight, with four on each side, and the door began to swing back the other way. Alistair stumbled backward, turned and fled, diving into the driver's seat of the cab, just as Noma managed to set Shigidi down in the back beside her with her arm still around him, his head resting on her shoulder.
"What the bloody hell is that?"
Alistair shouted as he revved the engine to life. "I think it's called Gog," Norma said quietly as they watched the gates fly open and the head and arm of the giant poke out, struggling to squeeze the rest of its hulking body through the narrow space.
A giant! You pissed off a fucking giant! Where in the hell did you even find one of them to annoy?
Shigidi groaned again. He could barely talk anymore. His head felt like it was made of stone. The substructure in the bottom of the museum, Norma answered. Shigidi wondered how Section 6 had revived the long-dead giants of Albion and, even more impressively, assigned them to some sort of security job beneath the museum.
There were two of them. Shigidi was injured when he killed the other one.
The giant was out and up to his torso now and wriggling to free his bottom half from the gate that was too small for someone of his size, slamming his fists wildly into the asphalt and bellowing as shocked ghosts and spirit entities fled the streets. Alistair let out a long whistle, floored the accelerator and swung the ungainly bulk of the vehicle out into the road, rear tire smoking.
Fucked, love, this is fucked!
Yes, I am aware. Now drive faster so we can unfuck it.
Yes, ma'am,
Alistair obliged and floored the accelerator, steadily revving up to what the speedometer announced was 70 miles per hour. The top half of the raging giant was receding, becoming a speck in Alistair's rearview mirror as the wind blew wildly through the windows. Alistair barreled down the spirit side of Bloomsbury Street and then swung right, hard. When they lost sight of the giant, Norma exhaled the breath she had been holding, and Shigidi felt her torso deflate under him. His head sank into her shoulder, and she turned so that they were in a half-embrace. She placed her palm to his face and whispered,
"I'm sorry, my darling. I'm so, so sorry I blamed you for getting us into this mess with Oloru. It wasn't your fault. I'm sorry. Please hang on. I don't want to lose you."
Shigidi heard her voice, even though it was muffled. There was a rising pressure on top of his head, pushing his consciousness down, further down. He was fighting to keep focus, but he was barely able to. The bright nightlights of Spiritside London's West End had been transformed into a streak of kaleidoscopic lines against the windows of both the erratic motion of the vehicle and his swimming vision. Still, he could just about make out shapes of buildings and signs and statues and spirit entities and ghosts. So many ghosts.
Norma kept whispering to him, "Listen to me. Focus on my voice. I'm sorry, Shigidi. I should have told you how much I felt instead of fighting my own emotions. I was afraid and angry, and I..."
Her voice fell even lower.
"I have been afraid since I lost my sister, since I lost Lilith. When I saw how love changed her, changed us, it scared me. I couldn't understand it at the time. In a way, I'm not so sure I do now. Not completely, but I understand a lot better than I did before. Besides, I've never been good at accepting love and care and kindness. Being loved has never been part of my story, you understand? Being lusted after for my flesh, my power, that has always been my story, ever since the fall. And I've embraced it, used it to my advantage. Learn to play within its parameters. It is who I am, who I was. Norma, the pretty serpent that toys with the hearts and minds of men and demons and gods. She pulled him gently closer. I've been playing that role for so long, it felt natural. I couldn't imagine any other kind of relationship with anyone, not until you. I feel things for you that I have never felt for anyone else. And I resented you for it, for making me feel like risking my own life for yours, as you did for mine. I know it doesn't make sense, I know, but it's how I felt. You've done something to me, and now I can't imagine living without you, so don't you dare die and leave me, you fucking nightmare god. You can't leave me now. I love you and I need you to stay with me, okay? Stay with me." Shigidi's mind, clouded as it was by pain, fluid loss, and the obscuring fog of imminent unconsciousness, processed her words slowly.
He had never heard Noma speak from the heart like this before, and she'd said her sister's name, Lilith. He didn't even know her sister's name was Lilith. At last, it seemed, they were fully open to each other, as open as they had instinctively known they could be that first night in the hotel when they'd caught the sadness in each other's eyes. Why had she waited until he was literally broken to say all this? He was about to croak something out in response when the road seemed to suddenly become bumpy and uneven. The vehicle vibrated like a child that had been left outside in the cold.
"Oh, fuck me!"
Alistair shouted, turning slightly to throw his voice back while keeping his widened and panicked eyes on the rearview mirror.
"Shit!"
Noma angled her neck to see what Alistair was panicking about. She did not get the chance to complete the motion. They slowed down for a fraction of a second, and Shigidi could feel the inertia of all 4,000 pounds of steel and carbon fiber slam into him as Alistair veered the taxi off at an impossible angle into a side road. He fell into Noma's lap as his vision became a whirlpool of lights punctuated by darkness. An arc of pain lanced through him like every nerve in his body had been touched by fire. He let out a hollow, hoarse cry that he didn't even recognize as his own. It sounded like a broadcast from far away. And then he felt the hysterical urge to laugh when he realized it was coming from him, because it meant his brain and his body were so uncoordinated that they couldn't even orchestrate a cry of anguish properly. But even that was too much effort, and the laugh remained stuck somewhere in his mind, obstructed by pain. He could tell that he was dying by inches. He hadn't just lost a critical aspect of himself. He was losing still more, unable to maintain the bonds of the physical and spirit particles that held him together. Soon there would not be enough of his essence left to maintain him as a coherent entity. The road beneath him was still shuddering. He lifted his head up slightly with Noma's help and peeked up, turning his neck as far as he could until he finally saw what had sent Alistair into a panic as he urgently navigated toward the rendezvous point. Gog was following, almost beside them, holding onto rough lengths of rope that had been tied around the necks of four metallic horses, their eyes aflame.
"What the? Are those the bronze horses of Helios?"
The Horses of Helios was a quasi-famous London landmark he'd seen in pictures and travel brochures, and it looked like Gog had brought the statues to life, taken them from their place at the corner of Piccadilly and Haymarket, fashioned some kind of makeshift chariots from the carcass of a car, and was using them to give chase, wrecking the road in his wake. The brewing orange storm in the sky had finally broken, and the sky was at war with itself. Clumps of asphalt lifted beneath the bronze horses like angry piano keys, throwing off a kaleidoscope of spirit particles. The denizens of London's spirit side were fleeing blindly, running the road. Some of them were too slow, their collisions throwing off even more bright bursts of damaged spirit particles. The horses were getting closer, eroding the little distance between them and the vehicle. Alistair made another sharp turn into a side street, and the car careened down a flight of steps. The descent was rough and rattled Shigidi's head, bouncing it against the roof and back into Noma's knees.
"Careful!"
Noma shouted.
"I'm doing my best, dear love," Alistair shot back. "But in case you haven't noticed, we're being chased by four living statues and one fucking furious giant."
"Hold on, my darling Shigidi. I love you. Do you hear me? I love you. Just hold on. Everything will be okay. We are almost at the High Commission. We will hand the brass head to Oloru and this will all be over. Just hold on," she whispered, but he couldn't hear her clearly anymore. The echo of his own thoughts had become loud and pounded against the walls of his mind. He could no longer resolve the shapes from the lights in the window. He tried to reach for the brass head of Obanufor that was digging into his side, to hold on to it at the end, feel some small final connection to the old god who had supervised his creation, abandoned him, then saved his life and sent him off to foreign lands to do his dirty work. "Oloru, I'm always returning to you in the end, aren't I?" He couldn't feel his fingers. He couldn't feel his anything anymore.
Noma's whispers evaporated when the horses finally crashed into them. The giant had run the heavy bronze horses right into their side, fishtailing the vehicle into a wild spin. There was a loud metal scream, an inhuman cacophony, as the violence battered the vehicle, peeling off metal pieces, powdering the glass of the windshield, and knocking in the right side doors. Noma was staring at him, her eyes full of emotion, as the world spun around them in what seemed like slow motion, fragments of glass suspended like so many stars. They held each other's gaze for what seemed like a small slice of forever, and then they shut their eyes together, just like true partners would, as the world came to a screeching halt. Darkness. Let there be. Light. I am. An impossibly large black and red rooster at a dusty crossroads, crowing. Red clay pouring from a white shell into an endless ocean. A generous offering of yams, palm fruit, palm oil, and ogogoro sitting on a railroad. A train made of chains, machetes, and machine guns approaches. Six babalawos wearing white flowing robes, their faces covered in white chalk marks, chanting in a forgotten dialect. A waterfall of blood crashing down onto a corpulent seven-tentacled mermaid as she breastfeeds a baby. A crocodile eating a hurricane as it drowns in a muddy river. Two streaks of angry lightning wrestling each other against a pitch-black sky shaped like a fist. A horned water buffalo charging a dam made of old bones. An old man in bright silver armor sitting on two clouds, the sun in his left hand and a spear of pure light in his right. A chorus of screams and the clash of metal against metal. I see, I hear, I feel, I understand. I don't understand. And then, darkness.